Our global shutdown has had some positive effects on the environment. Emissions have significantly dropped, primarily due to less cars being on the road, but also in electricity, aviation and industry sectors. This could put us on track for our Paris Agreement targets to mitigate climate change and limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, as long as we stick to it. Pep Cannadel is Chief Research Scientist at CSIRO and Executive Director of the Global Carbon Project. His team produced a preliminary global carbon budget to analyse carbon trends during COVID-19.
Emissions have actually declined to a low peak of 17% compared to last year. I mean, there's no precedent in the modern fossil fuel history. We would need to go back to, I guess, the Second World War to find a period where the economy was so shut down that the relative terms on emissions decline were similar. But otherwise, it has been very impressive. And if you look at the first 3 months of the year where we have all the data, we had an overall 8% decline. Again, we've never seen anything like that. The global financial crisis in 2008, which also saw a lot of manufacturing and production shut down, so a 1.5% decline. So we're looking at something, you know, a number of times bigger than what we have ever seen before.
How does that compare to what we have to achieve to meet Paris Climate Agreement limitations?
The really interesting thing is that we have done the projections for the full year, and we think there's going to be a decline compared to 2019 between 4 and 7%. And it is incredible, the coincidence that this is the exact decline that is required every single year from now on to be able to achieve the climate targets of the Paris Agreement. So, you know, we'll achieve it this year for the first time ever, but of course for the wrong reason.
Given that it would be quite a scary proposition for people to think that this kind of a shutdown is what equals intervention on climate change, what other systems need to be put in place to achieve this kind of a success every year ongoing to actually meet those targets?
Of course, it's a comparison to basically understand the magnitude of change, not that anyone is proposing or would be successful by saying, okay, we're going to shut down ourselves at home every year for 2 months so we can address climate change. But I think that it gives us a good sense of the overall magnitude. And of course, the magnitude of change is the magnitude of decarbonization of the energy systems. Australia has been moving very well into the greening of the electricity grid. So it just shows that we need to continue much more aggressively. For instance, Australia has not done anything about electrifying mobility, like electrification of cars. So the data shows that road transfer actually has incredible impact on the overall emissions. So, you know, we don't have to do anything in terms of not driving at all to achieve these emissions reductions, but we can accelerate the electrification of cars in this country, or we can support in the big cities, you know, more of what we call active mobility of, you know, biking, scooting or walking, which has other, you know, benefits.
Do you think that governments around the world are going to step out on the front foot with this?
I would say no, unless we really want them to actually do that. Governments will have tremendous pressure on their budgets for years to come. And unless we say there are opportunities, if we're going to spend money and we're going to try to regrow our economy, let's try to find places where we really want to invest long-term, places where there's no stranded assets because we're going to invest in the wrong energies, which in a few years' time, you know, may not have a place. And let's invest in those sectors which have shown the capacity to grow really fast, and that certainly includes renewable energy. So I think that it will not come naturally, but, you know, these are not just government decisions. It is, of course, decisions that all of us, we can influence what we expect from the governments to do.
Here in Australia, we've seen Angus Taylor release a 30-year technology roadmap that looks at including renewables, but still has a high reliance on carbon-intensive processes like using fossil fuels and gas and carbon capture. How does that fit with the achievement of the Paris Agreement?
The Paris Agreement really requires that by mid-century, which is 30 years or soon after, we're fully decarbonized. And the definition of decarbonization means that there's no net emissions going to the atmosphere. So that if we emit a little emissions, we need to remove them at the same time. It has to be equal to zero. Now, a lot of ways to achieve that, it doesn't have to, but it may include quite a bit of fossil fuels. But all these fossil fuels, they have to be accompanied by carbon capture and sequestration. So the idea is that if you want to have fossil fuel in your mix, you really have to actually do carbon capture and storage because there's no room to be emitting all those emissions.
So do you feel we're going to achieve those targets?
It's a very hard proposition, and governments and societies, they really need to be very clear that that's what they want. It's a big effort. It's a huge challenge. We see countries in other parts of the world, including a number of countries in Europe, moving really steady and clear towards these decarbonization goals. And at this point, we haven't laid out a plan in this country that will lead us to zero net emissions, but doesn't mean that we cannot.
Pep Cannadel, Chief Research Scientist at CSIRO and Executive Director of the Global Carbon Project.